From sunny Portland, Oregon, this is Casey McBride of the NationalCrimeSyndicate.com and the Uncle Frank's Place and Classic Gangster Society Facebook pages. I learned I'm a Peckerwood right here on the Gangland Wire.
Former Kansas City Police Department intelligence detective and now attorney Gary Jenkins produced four documentary films, most recently Gangland Wire, creator of smartphone app entitled Kansas City Mob Tours. Download it now. If you like what you hear, go to ganglandwire.com. Navigate to the shop page. We need you to put a hit out on our donate button. Gangland Wire True Crime Stories is produced at the Big Dumb Fun Show Studio 4. And now, here's Gary Jenkins.
Well, welcome all you wiretappers out there. It's good to be back here in the Ice House, the classic old Ice House in Midtown, Kansas City. I'm here with my good friend, Aaron. Say hello, Aaron.
Hello, Aaron.
Well, Aaron, you won't believe this. You know, we've been talking about the Black Hand all month, and Joe Petrosino, and Lupo the Wolf, or Wolf the Wolf, if you remember. Tonight, I was able to obtain Joe Ramo to come back from the other side, shall we say, and give us a short interview. He said he had to get on out and get to work tonight. He still goes out and patrols up in Little Italy every night.
So you reached out?
I reached out.
Through a medium.
I actually, a Ouija board. He was a Kansas City, Missouri police officer, just like I was, and we have some mutual friends.
Did you go by the cemetery where he's buried, maybe?
Well, sure. I mean, that's how I started. I went out there.
So, Joe, what we're really looking for is a really big closer for the end of our month.
And I left a police band radio there. I knew that if I kept calling on it, he'd eventually answer. Now, I understand that back in his day, they didn't have any radios. They had call boxes, and they may not even had call boxes in his day. But that I figured that he's a policeman. He surely is up there in heaven. He's been keeping up on the latest technology. And so I left a police band radio, and, you know, about a day later, probably at the end of his shift that night, next morning, I got a call. My handy talkie there, I had it laying by the bed, and I got a call, and it started scratching. It said, "Hello, hello." And so I called back, and I told him, I explained to him what the deal was, and he said he'd be happy to come in and do a short interview before he goes back to work tonight. So we've got Joe Ramo here, believe it or not. Joe, it's good to have you here, man. It's, you and I have a lot in common. Now, admittedly, I am what we have come to know in modern times as a Peckerwood or a non-Italian. I am of English, Welsh, I'm a descendant from Welsh and English people, and you are straight over from the old country. You came over from Italy. When and where were you born, Joe?
I was born September 23rd, 1879 in Naples, Italy.
Wow, that's
you do have something in common. You're both old.
Yeah, really. Yeah, found another policeman older than me, though. Hey, Joe, when did you come over? About how old were you, and what year was it?
In 1892, I was just a boy, about 13 years old.
Did you come into Ellis Island and on into New York City at the start?
No, we first moved to Chicago, and I grew up there. My father, he had a vegetable push cart there.
Oh, really? Well, that was probably quite a upbringing on the streets of Chicago in the Italian district. Probably, I think it's just west of downtown, if I remember right. Some of those Chicago stories we've done, Aaron, they're always talking about
south of the river.
Taylor and Western, I think, and it's. Cicero, of course, was the famous one where Al Capone was, but I know that's due west of downtown and on quite a ways on, and if you will, not quite a ways out in the suburbs, not like it is today, but it would have been the suburbs back then. Joe, you probably grew up around that intersection there, Taylor and Western. When did you first come to Kansas City?
Oh, I was about 19 years old.
Are you married, Joe? Did you get married after you got to Kansas City?
Yes, I married Jennifer DeFeo July 3rd, 1898, when I was about 19 years old. She was a beautiful 17-year-old Kansas City girl. I met her at her father's fruit stand on the city market. We call her Jenny. We were married by Father Cesar Spagardi. We could not afford to be married in the church, and he married us at her parents' home in the Italian neighborhood at 910 Missouri Avenue. She never learned to speak English so well.
So her name was DeFeo.
Yes.
Well, that's interesting. You know, there's a DeFeo fruit company. There used to be a city judge named DeFeo. It's a pretty well-known name in Kansas City.
Yes, our first child, Frank Joseph Ramo, was born May 26, 1900. We had six children altogether, but only four lived. Frank, Josephine, Benjamin, and Fanny.
Well, you first became a police officer at a pretty young age. First child was born in 1900. When did you first get hired on as a Kansas City police officer?
June 28, 1909, and I was the first Italian police officer hired. By July 28, 1909, I received the commission as a patrol officer, and I was assigned to the North End or the Italian neighborhood. This is all around the east side of downtown Kansas City, about 15 blocks, and about 6 blocks from the Missouri River to 6th Street. I live in my own patrol beat at 521 Charlotte.
Well, you live right over there where your patrol beat is now. Were you primarily and always assigned to police Italians, other Italian people? Is that probably the reason that you were hired?
Yes, that's why I was hired.
Now, at this point in time, are you the only Kansas City police officer of Italian descent?
Yes, I am, but they are going to hire a man named Luis Olivero, who just got out of the army at Fort Leavenworth. I hope they can get him out on the streets to help me soon.
Yeah, I understand from reading some of the headlines during that time, the Black Hand mafia groups are quite a problem down there in the North End. Have you ever had any experiences with the Black Hand before?
I have, and it's been ugly. My father was killed for standing up to the Black Hand in Chicago, and we moved to Kansas City. We thought we could get away from the violence. They had 36 murders in Chicago last year.
Well, 36 murders, Al. Now, 36 murders in modern times, Joe, I hate to tell you this, but 36 murders will probably happen sometimes at least every couple of months, at least every couple of 3 months in the bigger cities. Now, in Kansas City, we'll have 100 to 130 murders every year. But it's a lot more violent. Of course, there's a lot more people. It's a lot more violent today, I think, than it was back then, although it probably seemed like it was pretty violent back then. The chief of police, who was the chief of police when you got hired on?
Chief Wentworth Griffin, and his chief inspector of detectives is Edwin P. Boyle.
There are quite a few Irish officers. Edwin Boyle, I'm sure, is an Irish policeman.
Oh, yes. The Irish have all the good police positions for life.
Well, Joe, I know it's you're going to have to go to work here in a little bit. I understand that you received a Black Hand letter yourself. What can you tell us about that situation? What caused the Black Hand to start paying attention to you? Have you been after him?
Last December, Paulina Pisano, who runs a North End grocery store at 301 Campbell, received a Black Hand letter asking for $50. Then in January, Vincenzo Lazziato was killed in front of his store at 412 East 4th Street. I've been investigating these murders, and I'm getting close to solving these cases. See this letter? They want me to back off, but I know who the murderer is, and I cannot.
Oh, yeah. I see that letter, Joe. That's pretty interesting. It's written in Sicilian, I guess, or it's written in a foreign language. I can't really exactly read it. Can you translate for us?
Yes, I can. It says, Mr. Ramo, traitor, the others want money, and you know it, and this notice brings you death. Beware, the last notice. They wrote it with a red pencil to signify blood. The little knife with blood dripping means this is a message from La Mano Nero, or the Black Hand. El will not back down from these evil men.
Well, Joe, it sounds like you need to watch yourself. You better not turn your back on anybody. Do you have a partner that you work with down there? Do you have anybody to watch your back?
No, I don't.
How did you come about being able to identify the killer of Paulina Pisano?
In February, I was off duty in a saloon over by the city market when I overheard three men who I knew to be members of La Mano Nero, talking about this murder. As they talked, one man looked around the saloon, and I am sure he recognized me. I have informants that are warning me of a plot to have me killed.
Wow, that's pretty dicey, especially when you live down there, you walk around by yourself down there. What kind of precautions are you taking? You taking any particular precautions?
I have told many people that I know the name of this killer, and I hope that this will protect me because I am not telling the man's name. This way they know their secret is safe, but if they do anything to harm me, I will tell the name.
Well, interesting. I suppose if once you gather enough evidence, you probably will get the detectives down there and make an arrest on that murder. I kind of see your game, though, Joe. You're acting like that you're never going to tell anybody, and that way you're not a threat to them. I'm not sure if that'll work, but you know that community better than I do. Have you told any of your fellow police officers?
No, they do not care about crime down here. And many are in the pay of the La Mano Nera and cannot be trusted.
Well, Joe, I see you're getting, looking at, you're pulling out your pocket watch periodically, and I know you got to get going. What are you going to do tonight?
Well, tonight, well, they finally gave me somebody, Frank Dottle, and we're going to try and catch some of these criminals. Mr. George T. Briggs, a cigar store owner, was given a letter demanding $5,000 or he would be killed. I don't think it is a real Black Hand letter because it was written in pretty good English. Many extortionists today are using the reputation of the Black Hand to commit this kind of crime. We are going to place a dummy bag of money at Electric Park and watch it until the extortionist shows up.
Wow, sounds dangerous, but like I said, you know that community and you know your business better than I do. I've done a few things like that in my life. There's no better feeling than to catch them in the act. Joe, there's just absolutely none. I'll tell you a quick little story and I'll let you go. We found some guys burglarized a house over here in Midtown Kansas City, and they stored the property over behind a garage, and I had this tax squad and we surrounded it and got up on roofs, and we got a van out that's right next to it and a garage that was right next to there's a television and a stereo and the usual kinds of things. And pretty soon, about 15, 20 minutes later, this car slowed down and came down this alley and then stopped. And one of them got out and walked up to where the TV and the stereo were stacked. And I jumped down off the roof where I was, and I looked up, and all I could see was one of my biggest guys was bouncing this kid off the side of a building wall. Time I got there, he was pretty well incapacitated. He was not putting up any kind of fight. And the other crews, they had a guy sitting down in the car. The other crews grabbed him. So, Joe, I wish you luck tonight. And, I that was one of my favorite things to do, was run a stakeout like that. So I hope you catch him. Come back again sometime and tell us a little more about being working over in the North End and being the first mob cop. You know, Joe, I became a mob cop in 1976, and it continues on. We now have about 10 or 12 officers assigned exclusively to work on the mob. And you started it. You were the first one. You started all alone. So, Joe, good luck tonight, and I'm glad you came by to see us.
Thank you for having me. I'll see you soon.
All right, see you soon.
Watch your back, Joe.
All right, Aaron, that was pretty interesting, wasn't it?
That was.
That was. That was great.
I hate to break the news to him.
What's that?
What happens?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. I didn't. You notice I intentionally didn't tell him what was going to happen to him the next day after this.
But well, maybe we can have him, when he comes back, he can talk about the night he was playing cards at that club.
He can talk a little more about that. He can tell us a little more about who killed him, actually, because they never really made an arrest. They had a lot of good suspects. But we're going to talk about that in a minute, so we'll talk about that, folks. So Joe's out. He's walking around the neighborhoods. He's listening. He's handling the calls. He's helping people out with their problems, making sure the vote gets out for the right politicians, of course. But he's doing all of his thing. And there was a woman down there named Paulina Pisano. She had a North End grocery store at 301 Campbell. She received a Black Hand letter asking for $50, which $50 in 1911 was quite a little bit of money. It's probably like 500 a day at least, maybe even 1,000. She refused to pay that money, and they also I also found out that she was kind of sharp-tongued, and maybe there were some people that from Sicily, and she was from Sicily, that still had a vendetta against her and her family. But she's shot to death with a shotgun out in front of her store there at 301 Campbell, and that's in December in 1910. In January 1911, another store owner at 412 East 4th, which is about three or four blocks from 301 Campbell, the store owner Vincenzo Lasado was killed in front of his store. And more than likely, that was a black hand crime, too, that nobody ever really revealed any details of that at the time. Joe was investigating those murders, and he thought he was getting close to solving some of these cases, particularly these two murders. And then he gets a black hand letter. Now, if you ever heard of a black hand letter, you know what that is, Aaron? Here, let me show you a copy of one. Handing Aaron a copy of a real black hand letter.
Yeah, maybe what you need to do is put this up on for the show notes.
I'll put that up in the show notes. A copy.
And this one was to Joe Ramo.
Right, Joe Ramo was investigating these murders. What he did is he was in a saloon off duty in his civilian clothes, and people weren't being real careful about what they were saying. He overheard three men talking, and he knew them to be members of the Black Hand and what they would have called it at the time, especially in the Sicilian neighborhood. Now, Joe's original language was Italian, but Sicilian and Italian are pretty close to each other. But what they would have called him was La Mano Nera, which is the Black Hand. And he heard three members of La Mano Nera talking about this murder. And they talked about who did it and why they did it, and he was able to overhear this. But as they talked, one of the men looked around the saloon, and Joe believes he was recognized. And right after that, he started having friends of his, neighbors and whatever you want to call them, informants, that are warning him that there may be a plot out to kill him. And after that, he gets this letter. Now, I'm going to read you the translation. Mr. Ramo, traitor. The others want money, and you know it. And this notice brings you death. Beware, the last notice. Then it was written with a red carpenter's pencil. And so it was written in red to signify blood. They had a little knife drawn with blood dripping down from it and a cross on it, which is pretty typical of the Black Hand at the time. Now, at this time, I found out in researching this time frame of crimes in Kansas City and really throughout the Midwest, there was a lot of phony Black Hand letters. A lot of people were writing Black Hand letters, and they were writing them in English, in proper English. This letter was written in Sicilian, and we know that. For example, you see that the very bottom right, it says Lutima, L-U-T-I-M-A.
Or L-U-R-T-I-M-A, Lutima. Notiza?
Yeah, that's the last notice. In Spanish, it's ultima. Ultima, I mean, is last in Spanish. Well, in Italian, it would be ultima or ultima, and you would add the L to it in Sicilian. So that's how he demonstrated that was for sure written by a Sicilian, and that was a Sicilian language. He didn't really take many precautions. He told some people around the neighborhood, kind of let the word out that he knew who the killer was of Paulino Pizzano, thinking that, as the word gets out, then they can't just focus on him and they can't go around killing everybody. But other than that, and he wasn't really taking any action on it. But it just didn't work. It did not work.
Was there potentially another notice that he got before this that they're like, well, this is the second to last notice?
Could be. I don't
or
know.
That's they're the just only like one. They only give you one notice, which is the last one.
Well, that's the only one I know about. Maybe they might have orally given him a notice. I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, he was the only Italian officer in that neighborhood, which was the Little Italy of Kansas City at the time. Before that, there must have been an Irish cop working that beat. What happened to him?
Now, he just didn't pay attention to any of it. First of all, the Irish cop wouldn't have ever asked any questions. The Irish cop wouldn't have been in the saloon in a position to overhear three members of the Black Hand talking about a murder they committed. He would have been an outsider. Joe was an insider. He was part of the neighborhood.
But he was still known as a cop because he was the first Italian officer.
Right.
Everybody knew he was a cop.
Right. Well, he's in there off duty in plain clothes, and they didn't really pay any attention. They were talking, and he just happened to overhear it.
I guess the question I would have, he's investigating Paulina Paisano's murder, and he's only assuming that it was a Black Hand because... I'm wondering because
he's a policeman. He's an investigator. He knows that it was a Black Hand extortion. He overheard three members of Black Hand talking about killing this woman. He's probably got informants telling him that this was a Black Hand. This was, she wasn't paying the extortion money. He had learned that she had gotten an extortion letter for $50 and was refusing to pay it. She was described as a sharp-tongued woman. So she probably said, gave him some choice words and says, I'm not paying you guys. Get out of here. And they killed her for it. So he learns all this. He's out continuing to do his work. He's continuing to try to catch these Black Hand guys.
Does he figure out who they are?
Well, he knows who they are. He knows exactly who they are. His last night on duty, he had a partner, Frank Dowdle, D-O-W-D-E-L-L. I think that's probably an Irish name. They were working together, and they're going to try to catch some of these extortionists, these Black Hand extortionists. A man named George Briggs, who owned a cigar store in the West Bottoms, was given a letter demanding $5,000 he would be killed. Now, Joe wasn't sure if it was really a Black Hand letter because it was written in broken English. It wasn't written in Sicilian. Of course, they may have written it in English because they're sending it to a non-Italian, George T. Briggs. But the instructions were to place a bag of money at Electric Park, which was a park, and I can't remember the address. It wasn't too far. I think it was down around on Paseo. There's a big park called Electric Park because it had so many lights. It was like an amusement park that had rides and everything and had a whole lot of electric lights, so they called it Electric Park. But he was supposed to put a bag of money at Electric Park. And so Joe and his partner, Frank Dowdle, Officer Dowdle, put a dummy bag of money down there and watched it and watched it and watched it and watched it until about 4 o'clock in the morning. Nobody showed up. So he went home. He's off the next night, Tuesday, March the 28th. He's off duty. He decides to go out that evening. He goes to a saloon over at 4th and Holmes, just a block and a half or so from his house, and play some cards. Later that night, about 11 o'clock, he's walking home by himself to his house at 521 Charlotte. As he walks by a vacant lot with a low stone wall between 4th and 5th Street, neighbors will report later they heard four distinct shotgun blasts come out of the night. Joe Ramos struck in the back by about a dozen buckshot pellets. He falls to the ground mortally wounded. By the time the first officer or first person that can do anything at all gets there, he's already dead. First cops that get there start doing what, even back then, they did it somewhat right. They started doing a search around the area, and they found two sawed-off shotguns discarded in the alley behind the murder scene, which is kind of interesting because even up into the 70s and 80s when we had murders with a gun, they would find the murder weapons within a block or two of the scene.
Like in a dumpster or something.
Yeah.
Always seemed odd. Like you would think we wouldn't leave the weapon that they used that close to the scene of the crime because it would be easily found.
Or just...
Especially, you're talking, this is 1911.
Right.
And you're saying, well, in the 70s, they did the same thing.
Exactly. They're still doing it.
Like
well,
they didn't figure out because they kept getting caught for the weapons.
Well, at some point in time, somebody figured that you need to get rid of that gun. Well, the story I've heard is the rule is you keep the gun to get away from the immediate scene, and as soon as you realize there's like nobody around and you're away from the scene, then you just get rid of the weapon, because if you get caught with a weapon, then that'll tie you right back to the scene.
Yeah. But they'd like throw in a dumpster or trash can.
Right, or just out the side of, out the, along the side of the road. Johnny Green got killed up there by Nick Savella's house. They found it about, oh, it's about four blocks back out to Vivian Road, and then about a block or so east, back east on Vivian Road, they found one of the shotguns laying along the side of the road. I don't remember where they found the other one. But they found the murder weapons there, and that's happened several times. Anyhow, we digress. The chief of detectives, a good Irish boy, Captain Edward Boyle, would state right off the bat to the newspaper reporters that this had all the earmarks of a Black Hand murder, because when it happened, when they got there, the windows were all dark, the streets were deserted, nobody had even come out to see what was going on. And he said in Sicily, when the Camorra or the Brigata, the Camorra is the mafia, the organized crime from the Naples area, and the Brigata is the Black Hand or the organized crime families from the Sicilian area. Whenever they get ready to commit a crime, they would, back in the day, they would, in the old country, they'd give a signal like a whistle or maybe an animal cry out in the area, around in the area, like the Indians might do. This alerts all the neighbors that are in the know that they're out and doing their work, and everybody needs to stay out of sight. And even after four shotgun blasts, the arrival of many police officers walking around the neighborhood knocking on doors, nobody came out to see what was going on. Everybody knew what was something had happened, and it had something to do with the Black Hand, and they did not want to get involved. So the very next day, March 29th, 1911, officers come into work. The body of Officer Joe Ramo has been taken into the coroner's office and examined. They probably didn't even do an autopsy back then. He probably just glanced at it and wrote a little report and said, yep, he's dead. He was shot.
I wonder if you could find that.
I doubt it.
Is there an autopsy or death certificate?
There's a death certificate out there. I think I've got the death certificate, actually. It just says, you know, means of murder, homicide. Doesn't say much else. They carried the body of Joe Ramo home to await, to Lyon State, and await his funeral and burial. That's why they used to do it in the olden days, is a body would lie in state in the front room of your own house. A Kansas City Star newspaper reporter came over to the Ramo house, and Joe's eldest son, 10-year-old Frank Ramo, approached the reporter. And he asked that reporter, he said, did the Black Hand sign letters with a cross and a dagger? Because if it does, I've got a Black Hand letter. And he said, and the reporter said, well, you do? He said, yeah. And he took it out and showed it to him, that thing that I just showed you. They ended up printing an exact copy of it in the newspaper.
Yeah, actually, your photo of it is from, looks like an insert into the newspaper.
Right, the Kansas City Star.
Yeah.
Frank said that he found that note crumpled up underneath his parents' bed, and he just kept it. He told a reporter he did not want his mother to see it because she's crying all the time and she does not need any more trouble right now, doesn't need to be reminded of how her father was killed and who killed him. About that time, his brother Benny was standing there, and he was starting to cry, and he kept plucking at Frank's sleeve, saying, come on, we got to go in now, we got to go in. So Frank told the reporter just to keep the letter and give it to the police because they might want to see it. He, you know, pretty smart boy there.
And, except for the fact that they publish it in the paper, which is
right.
A death sentence for him.
Well, that's the deal, is they published it in the paper, and they published that he's the one that gave it to him. And so when anybody goes back and asks him, he would deny that this happened and then refuse to acknowledge he'd ever even seen the letter. And the reporters interviewed other residents around there at the time, and they all agreed that this boy was pretty wise to deny the existence of this letter because he still had to live down there. Chief of police at that point in time was a man named Wentworth Griffin. He posted an obituary and a special notice. I'll read this off. Is
this was the actual post?
Actual post that he put up on the bulletin board, the police department, and published in the paper. Officer Joe Ramo was assassinated at 11:15 on March 28, 1911, at 5th and Holmes. This officer was noted for his bravery and diligence in the performance of his duty. He has been especially assigned to various Italian cases, and his untiring efforts aroused considerable
enmity among the criminal classes of that nationality. Officers will use every means to bring to justice the perpetrators of this foul crime. March 29, 1911, KC police arrest four men for the murder of Paulina Pisano. Now, if you remember, Aaron, that's the murder that started all this. He overheard these men talking about her murder.
She was the shopkeeper that they wanted 50 bucks from.
Right. They are Lorenzo Messina, Nick D. Hernando, Sam Genuso, and Joe Denuncio. What's interesting is the paper identifies them as Syrians, not Italians or Sicilians. I wonder if it was a spell check problem. They meant Sicilians, but they said Syrians. I don't know. Reporting was not as precise back in 1911 as it is today.
Yeah, with 1911, you wouldn't think there would be a lot of Syrians in Kansas City.
Really?
But they were all in St. Louis, I guess. So.
Well, they were. There was a few.
Nick D. Hernando doesn't necessarily sound real Italian.
Doesn't sound very Syrian either.
No.
Lorenzo Messina, that's definitely, there's still Messina family here today.
And Genuso, that sounds Italian.
Yes, and Denuncio was Italian, so I don't think they were Syrians. I think they were Sicilians. All right, we digress. When they arrest these guys, they're found in possession of three shotguns, exactly like the shotguns left by the assassins of Joe Ramo. I never could find the disposition of these three men, but I would say these are your prime suspects.
But that doesn't mean that they were ever arrested.
They were arrested. I just don't know what their disposition was.
Finding criminal records from 1911, probably pretty hard.
Very hard. Very, very hard. March 30th, 1911. The third day, 28th, 29th, 30th, 1911. Joe Ramo's wife's brother, remember, she was a DeFeo, Jenny DeFeo. Her brother, Sabino DeFeo, asked for and received permission to have Joe Ramo buried in his police uniform. Chief Wentworth Griffin would assign a funeral escort of 17 police officers under the command of Captain Charles Edwards. Funeral was held at Holy Rosary Church at Missouri and Campbell. Father Del Becci conducted the service. Officer Ramo was a member of the Eagles fraternal organization, and they participated in the funeral mass. He was buried in St. Mary's Cemetery, and which is just like Joe Petrosino is buried in a cemetery where many other black-handers and mob guys are buried in New York City. Well, same thing here. St. Mary's out there in 22nd Cleveland. That's the burial site of many La Cosa Nostra members and black hand mobsters back in the day.
Do you have the St. Mary's Cemetery in your app?
It's on my website. I got a map with locations like that on my website, and I've got it on my website. April 7, 1911, 300 copies of a reward poster were published in both English and Italian. City Council offered $1,000, and the Missouri governor, Herbert S. Hadley, offered another $300. Here's the exact reward poster. I got a copy of that. $1,300 reward. Above will be paid for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the assassin or assassins of Joseph Ramo, policeman, who was murdered on the night of March 25, 1911, at about 11:15 p.m. Home Street between 4th and 5th Street, Kansas City. Now, the police board were meeting at this time, and they discussed offering a separate and their own reward, but, you know, they never did offer any reward. Here's what Joe Ramo got, again, killed in the line of duty. He had recently become a member of the Police Relief Association, which morphed into the Police Benefit Association. They still have it today, and I think if you pay your dues every year, which is like $15, you get a $300 insurance policy. When you die, your widow or your beneficiary get $300. Well, back then, the only insurance they had was through the Police Relief Association, and his widow was to be paid $1,500 from the life insurance policy. The police board did pass a resolution to ask the city council to pay Ramo's widow his salary for 6 months. Then after that, she was on her own. Now, today you get killed in the line of duty, your widow is going to get 60% of your salary tax-free for the rest of her life. And I think the federal government, at one time, your beneficiary got $100,000, but I think it's gone up to maybe even $250,000 now. Any public service officer that's killed.
A federal official, you mean?
No, local too.
Local too?
Yeah, they passed a federal law after
That kind of money, wouldn't you worry about maybe if you had a bad relationship with your spouse?
Well, it'd have to be in the line of duty. She'd have to set something
She'd have to kill you in the line of duty.
Figure out some way to make it look like you were being killed in the line of duty.
But, I mean, for $1,500, you'd probably... You'd rather have them come home and bring the check home and be alive. But it seems odd that they'd put a reward poster out looking for information on these assassins, and yet here they have four men and three shotguns.
Yeah, I know.
But we're still looking.
We're looking back into history, so
well, they didn't
I'm
have ballistics
sure.
either back then.
No, we're going to get into
and
a little bit
and
of
And the
that.
Count's kind of off. They find, you know, they find four guys, right, three shotguns on the guys.
Right.
And then, but at the scene of the crime, there's two other shotguns.
Right.
So that's like five shotguns.
Which were similar to the shotguns that they found in there.
In yeah, in their possession. So they didn't have ballistics back then either.
And shotguns, ballistics don't do you any good anyhow. No. If you use a shotgun and leave it at the scene, it doesn't do you any good.
You can't tell anything.
And even if you find the shotgun later on, the shotgun doesn't do any good because there's no rifling in the shotgun. I have to give you a little schooling in ballistics here, Aaron. But
well, it sounds like a schooling if you're a criminal. Use a shotgun.
Exactly. Yeah, if I was going to go kill somebody, I'd use a shotgun. Aaron, we are at kind of a break point here. We have we're starting the investigation. They make some arrests. They recovered some weapons. Of course, they recovered the...
two shotguns, which they assumed were involved in it.
Right. So let's go ahead and break this and talk. We'll get back into more of the investigation because there's quite a little bit more of the investigation after that. As you might well imagine, it didn't last as long as one might think. If you have a friend or relative or a loved one that has a problem with drugs or alcohol, make your first call to First Call. Call 816-361-5900 or go to their website, www.firstcallkc.org. What do you got to say to that, Aaron?
I've got to say, folks need to download the Kansas City Mob Tour app. This whole discussion has really revealed maybe a couple of locations that are in the app or should be in that app. For $1.99, ladies and gentlemen, you can take your own personalized tour of notorious mob locations, historic as they are, in and around Kansas City. And then, of course, what you want to do is get the movie that started it all, Gangland Wire, available on Amazon to own or to rent for a little bit less. But if you're going to get it, you might as well own it. And, of course, if you have that much of a love for the mob, and you really love Gary Jenkins because it's all this material that's from the mouth of the men that did it, then what you need to do is get his latest book, Leaving Vegas.
How FBI wiretaps ended mob domination of Las Vegas casinos.
Get the book, get the Kindle, and you're going to learn how they did it, skimming funds from Las Vegas.
And if you don't do Kindle and you don't understand it, if you want to get hold of me and you bought the book, the hardback, I will send you a PDF copy of the book in which you will have the links that you can, at each wiretap transcript that's in there, you can click on the link out of the PDF. And if you're hooked up to the internet, you'll go right to the site that has the actual audio of the men who were talking, committing these crimes, were plotting deaths and plotting how to skim from casinos and how to blackmail members of the Nevada Gaming Commission and other little nice little tidbits like that.
I mean, they've got the Mob History Month in Vegas in January, but they don't have a Black Hand History Month.
Well, that's part of the mob, so.
It is, but.
Maybe I can convince them to come out and do the Joe Ramo story. I'd write a book about it. I'm thinking about expanding this into some kind of a short book.
Well, the Petrosino story, or Petrosina?
Petrosino, yeah.
Petrosino story.
Stephen Daughtry would have to do that. He's the expert on that.
I thought there was somebody, Vice had already jumped in on that and done something they released.
No, they did an interview of Stephen Daughtry and released an interview of Stephen Daughtry. That's the guy that you guys just listened to him and earlier this month. So
what you need to do is help us in the production of Gangland Wire, the podcast. You could become one of our mob associates. That's right. Become a mob associate to Gangland Wire. It's $10, and we'll give you two extra episodes and some protection. Or, you know, what we're looking for is some strong arms, somebody that could maybe be a soldado. And for $25, of a donation, you get 5 extra episodes, copies of the Villa Capri and the Breckenridge Inn wiretap affidavits, a copy of an affidavit signed by Tokyo Joe, also better known as Ken Ito, identifying the Chicago outfit bosses, and a DVD of Gangland Wire and Protection from Other Mob Guys with podcasts.
All right. I think there's one more level above that.
Oh, there's a couple levels above that.
$500, you'd be the Capo de Tutti de Capi, and we'd give you all kinds of stuff.
That's right. And Capo Regime, the Soto Capo.
Right.
You want to be a Don, it's only $100, and you could be the Don of your own city.
Right, and you get Gangland a coffee Wire. Cup. You get a Gangland coffee cup with that, don't you?
That's right.
Yeah. Cool, I had those made up. I drank out of mine all the time. All right, Aaron, say goodnight.
Goodnight, Aaron.
Goodnight, everybody.
Bumper music provided by Odd-O-Matic.
On the advice of my lawyer, I respectfully refuse to answer that question, as my truthful answer may tend to incriminate me.
First,
Pete Rose.
Pete Rose, yes.
This is baseball season.
Yeah, although this may not get out till May.
I'll probably put this
puts
out.
This up
earlier. I'll put this out instead of Most Wanted probably next week. Although I need to get this other one up too pretty quick. I'm gonna put this other one up, I think, as a regular thing, and this up as a instead of a Most Wanted next week. I got so many. We're gonna have to quit recording here for a little bit. I think I just got so many. I forget what I've got. Need to slow down. I'm really into this Pardue story, and then this Raimo and Luis Olivero, he was the other Italian policeman that came along after Raimo was killed. I did a ton of research the last few days on those two.
Were you just out of the newspaper?
Those are, I got newspaper clips. I got this service called newspapers.com, and I can go back and not every newspaper, for $7.95 a month, you get a lot of newspapers. For $19.95 a month, you get all of them. But I've never really, what happens is the little newspapers, most of whom are all in there, you know, like the Chillicothe, Missouri newspaper or the Butte, Montana, or it's all over the United States, and then you can keyword search it, and they've all been important keywords like names and stuff, they're all in there, our Black Hand.
Yeah.
So I can, and you can narrow it down to dates. And like, even though I don't have the Kansas City Star, it's got the Kansas City Times. So the Times did as many articles on Raimo as the Star did. I'm sure there might be another article or two. I'd have to go downtown to the library and take a look. If I had a few minutes and I had some time, I might run down there and take a look just around the time he was killed. But you can't keyword search those down there, so you have to know the exact date. And then sit there and pull it up on microfilm. But this is on computer. So I can search for like Luis Olivero, and I get, that's not really that common a name, and I can narrow it down to, you know, like 1900 to 1930 or 32, whenever he was killed. And I get every time he was mentioned. And I found out that there's his wedding announcement. Well, first of all, when he was in the military in Fort Leavenworth, they had a list of people who achieved sharpshooters badges,
and he was
one of them. And so then there's a little social, like in the social news of the day in Leavenworth, he and some friend of his, another Italian guy, visited some Italian family. And then there's a marriage license where he and the name of a woman who had that same family's last name got a marriage license, and then there's an announcement of their wedding.
I wonder, can you get the marriage license from the state?
Might be able to.
I mean, I don't know if you have to pay for that, or you could pull it up online.
It'll depend.
There's an older record like that.
Sometimes you can't, but not from the state, but Ancestry.com.
Oh, okay.
Which I don't pay for that. It's kind of expensive, but yeah. I can go down to the National Archives and get that. Like I got their draft card. Their draft registration form.
You found that at the National
was
Archive?
Was it Raimo's or Olivero's? One of the two, I found their draft registration card. And You can find sometimes their birth certificate or their death certificate and marriage certificates and ancestry.com. Some are there and some aren't. I don't really remember. I went down there the other day to talk to my friend down there, and I looked up some stuff on Raimo and found his draft registration card and a couple other things. A Kansas City Star article, which
did
I got
a,
that.
You get to take like a photocopy of it or?
Yeah, or I can, I think
take
I.
Take a photograph
I,
of it.
I can print it out or. Let's see, I'm getting them mixed up. The Kansas City Star down at the library, I can email the article home. I think down there
even
I have
it's
to.
Like on microfiche?
No, I can send myself a copy of what they've got scanned in. I can take up what happens down at the art. The it's on microfilm down at the not scanned in down at the library, but it will take a picture of it, and rather than print it out, they'll just attach it to an email and send it home.
And send it.
You can get a lot
like
done.
Like a PDF.
Right, PDF, exactly. And this newspaper.com, I can get any from, it'll pull up the whole newspaper for that day, and then I can clip the article I want and then send it in as a PDF attached to an email to myself. And then I have to go back in, and I've got this down now. Then I go back in, open the email, and I get a URL address, and I block and copy that and put it in a new browser window. And it goes right to that, and then I download the PDF, and then I save it to the file, and then I just,
build out this, like a folder full of these PDFs
with different
press clippings.
Right. I just have a folder already set up for Aimo or Olivero or for Pardue. I've got Pardue. I've got clippings out the kazoo, and that's another case. That's the case of those two guys that were bombing banks and setting off bombs to distract the police. More of a modern case, but these old cases and the Black Hand stuff, you remember Stephen Taltry told us that they reported on this a lot, and you'd be amazed what you can get when you just plug in the words Black Hand. And even on all the little papers, they will pick up
bigger papers, stories, and
a
rerun
snip
them.
And rerun them, or maybe the whole thing or in its entirety, and then I could get a big St. Louis newspaper, and they reported the heck out of Black Hand stuff in St. Louis, so I snagged some of those just to talk about what it was like, because they had great detail. Now in Kansas City, they didn't do that much Black Hand stuff, or they were talking about the Black Hand. They kind of kept that a little more in the down low. The newspapers didn't report it. When Raimo got killed, they reported a lot. But then as soon as that was over, you could tell when that investigation wound down why it was just done.
When he got killed, was he was walking home?
Yeah, he's just walking home
from a card game,
playing cards all night or
did
during the night.
Have that address.
Yeah.
Because there's another address for your app.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
I never had put it in.
And his home address.
Of course, I went down to find it, it's gone. All that stuff is gone from what it was back then for the most part. Because that they all lived in that area around Columbus Park and the on-ramp to the ASB Bridge, or now the Harbor America Bridge and all that. And all that's been changed and it's been ripped out and businesses, old houses torn down, businesses put in, so a new firehouse over there, and a whole bunch of new apartments and all that. So most of those addresses
aren't even there anymore.
Aren't even there. A little farther over into what we call the Litlet, those addresses are there. And I've got some of them in there. But I think I looked for Olivero's or Raimo's when I was making that app, and it wasn't there at all. I thought about putting in the
what about the well the
location of the street where he was walking down. I mean, there isn't anything there. I can't remember what it. Maybe the park's there or something now, but I don't remember if I pulled the trigger on or not. I have to go back and look at the app.
Well, and the other thing maybe is where's he buried?
Yeah, he's buried at Calvary Cemetery, where all the mob guys are buried, actually.
Ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
Pete Rose?